This is Noah Weil. Welcome back to the podcast. This week, I talk about jury duty, specifically with two good friends of mine who have had jury duty. We talk to them about that experience. And then there's a surprise guest from someone who's supposed to be in bed, but she got up because we were talking so loudly. Who is it? Stay tuned.
Thanks for tuning in. Host Noah Weil is a licensed attorney admitted to practice in Washington State and the Federal Court of the Western District of Washington. Some guests on this program may be licensed attorneys as well. However, the discussion on this podcast is intended to be informative only and is not a substitute for legal advice for your particular situation. The information may be right or may be wrong. Changing laws and the laws of individual states mean the information presented here may not be accurate. But regardless, and this part is important, neither Noah nor any guest here is your lawyer. If you need a lawyer for your individual situation, you should consult and retain your own attorney.
I think this will make a lot of noise too. So
I think, yeah, every time you slam the table, I think it'll just sound like a cannon. It'll be like 1812 overture, and people will be like, I'm serious about this belief of mine. I need to emphasize the statement. Please drink all our beer. That's fine. And are you ready to get started?
Yes.
Okay. This is Noah Weil with the Better Know a Lawyer podcast. Today, I am joined by Dan Diamond and Brianna Blazer, Dr. Blazer. Thank you
for giving me that.
Yeah,
respect.
You've earned that honorific, and you get that title. I know I'm the only one who calls you that, and that's okay by me. So, you guys are not lawyers, correct?
Right,
not lawyers. And I brought you on today that you guys had jury duty, and I want to talk to you about that as a non-lawyer who was an officer of the court for a little while. Does that sound fun?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Dan, you live in West Seattle.
That's right.
And you have a wife and a son.
Yes.
And you're a web developer.
Right.
And have you done jury duty before?
Nope, it was the first time.
Okay, we'll talk to you in a second. And Brianna, I've got some notes about you. you are work in higher education. And you have a 2-year-old daughter. And we're sleeping together. And you're my wife.
Yep.
Those are my notes. Is that right?
That's correct.
I don't know who put these notes together. I just wanted to check with you. That's all true?
Do you know what? Actually, when I had jury duty, it was the same courthouse that we got our marriage license in.
Hooray!
Yeah.
Yeah, we're linked. So that's great. How's that going for you?
Which part?
The married to me.
I think we're still married.
Our kid's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's adorable.
She's the best.
I agree. I'm glad you're on the show. Listeners, and of course, I mean listener, you may recognize Dr. Blazer's voice as voice of the disclaimer.
I forgot about
like
that.
Like at the beginning of this episode.
No, that was a professional voice actor.
You made scale on that, so that was good. Okay. And had you done that?
I'm also the director of marketing for the firm. Is that correct, or did I lose that job?
Yeah, that was kind of a title you gave yourself. It was never actually, the board never approved that. I'm sorry. Do you want to talk about your job in detail? Who you work for, what you do, the name of your boss, the name of your colleagues?
No.
Okay, great. So, Brianna, you had jury duty 6 years ago.
Something like that.
In the Maryland courthouse.
In Maryland, yeah.
Was that the first time you were with jury duty, and so far the only time?
Yeah.
Okay. So, Dan and Brianna, I'm kind of going to bounce back and forth between you guys a little bit because a lot of my questions overlap. But, Dan, first tell us what courthouse was your jury duty in?
The Seattle Municipal Court.
Okay. And how did you find out you had jury duty?
I got a letter.
Okay. And when you got that letter, What did you think? Were you excited you got to do jury duty, or were you like, oh, this is going to be disruptive to my life?
You mean after I opened it?
Yes, after you opened the letter.
No, thank God, it's not a bill.
It was not a bill.
I thought it might be a ticket.
You were not a defendant?
I knew, sometimes I see those flashes at the intersection. I'm like, I'm going to get something in the mail. I was like, oh, no, they found me.
But, oh, that's actually interesting. Is the front of the envelope didn't say, like, jury duty or anything on it?
I don't think so, no. Okay. It just said it was from the Seattle Municipal Courthouse, I think.
Okay. I've never been called for jury duty, so I don't even know. That's
so, did you open the mail that day, or did Jess get it and stare at it until you got home?
No, I think she just gave it to me.
Okay.
I'm going to host this.
Well, I know, but, like,
if one, you get one host. One host.
If you get something in the mail that, like, says, from the court, I'm always like, what is this?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. One host. Great. Thanks. So you got something from the court. You didn't know if you got a bill or jury duty, or you were going to be arraigned, or you were being banished or something, but you opened it up and it was jury duty. What did you think at that point?
I was really excited.
Yeah? Why is that?
I've always been really envious of people that got to do it, because I always wanted to know what it was like.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, they chose me.
they chose you, yeah. They went to your name, and they're like, oh, this is Dan Diamond. He's got chops.
Yeah.
He's ready. We're going to call him up to the big leagues.
Yeah.
What about you, Brianna?
You know, at the time, I was traveling a lot for work, so I was actually worried because I had a work trip for the day that I got called, and so I had to call them and reschedule, and I think they were just so happy that I was calling them instead of blowing them off. They were like, yeah, you can come in whenever you want. What date do you want?
If you
want
to be really high when you come in, that's cool. We just want a body in the seat. It doesn't matter what's going on.
Yeah, and then I learned later that when you reschedule, then you end up being one of the first people on, like, whatever date you reschedule for, so you're more likely to actually get placed on a jury.
Oh, well, if you want to be on a jury, I guess that's a good trick.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, in that courthouse in Maryland. Brianna, I know what the Seattle Municipal Courthouse looks like, and I know they have a beautiful jury room. 12th floor, gorgeous, views of the city.
Well, but can I ask you a question about that, by the way?
Yeah, sure.
Was that meant to be a joke?
I'm the host. I ask questions.
Was that meant to be a joke, that it was the 12, like, 12 people in the jury, the 12th floor?
No, I don't. I mean, I wasn't, like, the architect or the designer or the person who chose those things.
You never heard anyone talk about that or anything?
I don't think so. That would be cool. But the problem is, in Seattle Municipal Court, juries are juries of 6, not 12. So,
I guess. I actually knew that.
Okay, so.
I mean, mine was.
Do you want me to cut that out because it was such a dumb question? Or all right, we'll keep it in. That's fine. So, what was your holding area look like?
You know, it was it's in Montgomery County, Maryland, in Rockville. And it was just a nondescript office building, conveniently located next to a movie theater and a shopping mall. So, nothing exciting.
Okay. Because have you been to the municipal court, 12th floor?
No, I think I've been... No, I've only been to the jail courthouse with you, I think.
Oh, well, this is the opposite of that. There's the one in the basement that's got no windows and it's full of cells.
Oh, maybe it's not the jail court. But it's on the ground level.
We've been to the jail court before, but this is the 12th floor. It's gorgeous.
No, the one we've been to is the ground level.
There's windows everywhere. Full windows. I think our daughter's awake. So let's hope that's not true. It's lovely. What's the vibe in the room? Are you talking to other people there? You get to meet these, like, complete strangers. You've been put into a room together randomly. Are you chatting it up? Is everyone excited? Is everyone, like, pissed that they're there? What's kind of the mood, Brianna? Do you remember?
Do you know, I think it would be quite different now than it was then, because this is, like, before everybody and their brother had a cell phone, right? So instead of playing Pokemon Go, I was probably reading a magazine or a book or something, just waiting to be called. But I didn't sit there for very long before I got called and put in a room.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah, everybody just pretty much kept to themselves. Like, I actually brought a book because I thought that I might be waiting a long time. So
that's smart. Bring a book to jury duty.
I think I brought my work laptop too.
Yeah. That's a good idea.
And I had a data plan for my work laptop at the time, so I could do a lot of work.
Nobody was, like, gnashing their teeth, like, raging. Oh. Hi. Hello. Hi, Evelyn. Can you say hi? Can you say hi to the microphone? Can you say hello?
What are you supposed to be doing right now?
Should you be night-nighting? Why are you up, Evelyn? There's a lot of stuff going on, isn't there? I'm just going to pause it. We're now talking quieter because we don't want to wake up my daughter. And your daughter, too. They're the same person. So everyone's kind of keeping themselves, but there didn't seem to be any undercurrent of, I wish I wasn't here.
No, I think mostly people were... Well, there might have been a few people that were irritated, but I think... I don't know, I could just be projecting here, because I knew I got my full pay, and I didn't really want to work that week anyway.
Mm-hmm. Your job was supportive of you doing jury duty?
Well, they... I mean, they have a... Don't they legally have to let you do jury duty?
They can't fire you, but they don't have to pay you.
Oh, no, my job gives full pay.
Yeah, that's great.
For jury duty, yeah, so...
Who doesn't get... I mean, I guess service workers don't get full pay.
Yeah, I don't know if McDonald's does or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I think there are places that don't. They can't fire you, but they don't have to pay you.
But yeah, so basically I got to do something new and interesting.
I asked the questions. I'm the one. I'm the host. Better know I'm.
Who came up with that name?
I don't remember.
I do.
The director of marketing.
Yeah. Yeah, but I, you know, it was like just like a fun thing I got to do, and I got my full paycheck, which is... It was like being on vacation, but I didn't have to use that vacation, so it was pretty...
And you get to do your civic duty.
Yeah, I got to feel like I, for once... God, this is making my job sound terrible. No. Yeah, it felt important to me.
Okay, so you hate your job, and you're able to get away from that hell for just...
Can you edit that part out?
I mean, technically I can, yes. I have the ability to do that.
I hope the one listener isn't my boss.
Ooh, let's see what better know a lawyer. What the shit? So ungrateful. So you got to go into the courtroom right away, is that right?
Yeah, we went into the courtroom pretty soon after we got there.
Did you watch a video or anything? Did they give you any instructions on jury duty or what it meant?
Not that I remember.
Really?
Yeah.
So what, after you left the holding area, what happened then, Brianna?
Well, again, slightly fuzzy on something that happened a while ago. But, you know, when we got to the courtroom, they started asking questions pretty shortly there.
I asked the questions. I'm the host. Oh, sorry.
When you're in the courtroom, I interrupted. I believe that, yes, you can ask questions very important to your...
I do.
But they started asking questions. But, you know, some of them were general questions at the beginning, like who'd had jury duty before, and had anybody ever been a victim of a, you know, crime, and... for those questions, every time somebody said yes, they just excused them and they went and talked to the bench, so we didn't get to hear any of the salacious details, which was, of course, disappointing. And they knew that the room we were in was going to be a four-day trial, and so they were asking who had a conflict. But again, I was kind of excited, like, 4 days and I don't have to go to work? And we got paid $15 a day. So,
did you make your paycheck from your work too?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no. You know what the better part about it was too? I made friends on the first day, and we all went out to lunch. I guess it was the second day. We all went out to lunch together, and one woman was like, let me just pick up the check, and then we'll rotate. And we had two more days left of our four-day trial, right? Because this was day two. So next day...
Well, let's not jump ahead.
The next day, this guy picks up the lunch. And then we didn't end up staying through lunch on the last day. And so I got two free lunches out of it. $15 a day and two free lunches. So, and free parking.
I mean, free parking's nice, I guess. It's like you wouldn't be there normally, so it's not like you would gain anything. But okay, that's great.
Yeah. Are you seeing how I profited on jury duty?
Oh,
the system profited.
I did too, because I got some bus tickets, but I already had a pass.
True, duty is the greatest scam known to man.
But then you have to claim it on your taxes.
Your 15 bucks?
Have to.
Well, yeah, there was no documentation.
You've clearly never won a magic tournament before.
Here's the irony. You don't claim on your taxes. You get charged with tax evasion. Someone else has jury duty. The cycle repeats.
I claimed that on my taxes, just so you know.
Okay. I approve. Cautiously. a little lame, but okay. Every year, as you know, I just pick one thing to not declare on my taxes. I just draw it on my head.
It's a good thing I'm the one that does our taxes, huh?
So, Dan, you were in this nice room for a while. You watched a video, right?
Yeah. It was like a it had like, you know, like the superimposed constitution or something.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, one of my law professors is in there. I'm my ethics professor. What did you think of the video?
It was sort of condescending, I guess. Because it was like, you should take this seriously. It's important.
I know you normally wouldn't. You hippies and you stoners.
I know you don't give a crap about anything. You're all a bunch of nihilists.
Stupid millennials. But for once in your life.
I mean, do people really not know what they're doing? I mean,
I think that you have to ask the question. I think that they have to start with like that baseline. They can say that everybody who's at jury duty is instructed in the same way, so to make the results more reliable.
I think they have to assume the lowest common denominator too, right?
Yeah.
Like a person that literally doesn't know what jury duty is or something.
I think it's going to be challenging. That's fine. So you watched the video, and how long more were you in there before you were brought to a courtroom?
I think that we watched the video at like 9:30, and I didn't go to, I think it was like 2 when I got called in. Okay. I was put on the first panel, but then it wasn't called in for a while.
So what does it mean that you were put on the first panel?
The first group of people that were going to go into a courtroom, I guess.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure that's what it is, but that
did you answer any questions in that first panel? Did the lawyers talk to you?
You mean when we went in the courtroom?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when we went in the courtroom, then the lawyers started asking us questions.
Okay. Do you remember what kinds of questions you were asked?
Yeah. So it was actually kind of like political questions.
Mm-hmm.
So they asked... I mainly remember, well, there was like, have you ever been the victim of a crime, that kind of thing. But then there was, you know, there was questions that clearly alluded to the case. Like, it was like, how do you feel? Do you have strong opinions about the police? Do you have strong opinions about firearms? those kinds of questions.
And this wasn't the jury you ended up being on?
It was.
Oh, it was. The first panel you went on was the one you ended up being on?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm going to get to the case, the meat of it. But Brianna, you had the same similar experience. You were brought in with a big group.
Yeah, and you know, they asked a lot of questions and just asked people to raise their hands, and then didn't always ask for a lot of clarification. But you know, they asked things like, "Is anybody in your family a lawyer?" And you were in law school at the time, so I remember being like, "I don't know. How should I answer that?" They asked if anybody was a scientist. At the time, I was working for a major science professional organization, and so I definitely gave a really weird answer about, like, I'm not a scientist, but I study them and work on their profession. They didn't give a crap.
I watch The Watchers.
Yes, they asked a bunch of questions, and then...
Did it seem awkward? Because some of the questions can be kind of personal. You know, have you ever been the victim of a crime? What are your thoughts on, you know, the police and policing? These can be intimate questions. It's not always like, would you bring up in polite society? Did it ever feel weird kind of exposing yourself to a bunch of strangers?
No. I mean, they weren't that personal of a question. But I remember they were asking something about, like, you know, your civic duty as a juror or whatever. But they worded it really badly, so that basically everybody raised their hands and being like, I couldn't be partial because they worded it badly. And they had to throw that question out. But they basically ended up seating, like, almost the first 12 people, and then threw out a couple people. But
what about you, Dan? Did you feel that that you were uncomfortable talking about sometimes personal subjects in a room full of strangers?
No, not really. I mean, I remember thinking the only thing I found a little embarrassing was it felt like people were sort of using it as a pulpit to express their personal views. And I kind of didn't want to be that guy, but then I did want to be honest. So mm-hmm. It was like, all right, I guess I'll just say how I feel.
That's good. It's every lawyer's fear that the people that could be jurors won't tell the truth in that process. And because it's awkward and social and public speaking and sometimes intimate topics, and it's nice to hear you guys felt comfortable enough to tell how you felt.
I don't think there there were really that many places where people elaborated. Like, the people who'd been a victim of crime went up to the bench and talked about their experiences or the more intimate things. But otherwise, it was really just people raising their hands and them asking for, like, two-word clarifications.
Okay.
So there wasn't a lot of, like, bearing your heart and soul.
Okay.
But I don't know if that's just a cultural difference or just a matter of the questions they were asking. But they asked a whole bunch of questions about, like, forensics and science, so I was, like, super excited to see what forensics and science we're going to see, and then we didn't get any of that in the case. So
how did you... Well, let me put it like this, and we'll start with you, Brianna. Did you draw any impressions or conclusions about the lawyers themselves based on the interactions they had with the whole jury panel?
You know, I don't remember that specifically, but I know I've told you this before about the defense lawyers, and this was before you thought you were going to do criminal defense. I think you were in law school. You were in law school at the time, but you weren't doing criminal defense. But there were two defense lawyers, and one of them was super short and just smiled and was so smarmy the whole time that, he just seemed like an asshole and made me not want to like him. I mean, that was like the whole time, not just during jury selection.
From start to finish, he just seemed really smug and full of himself.
Yeah, and the
you seem artificial.
Oh yeah. And the prosecutors just seem down to earth and like they were trying to do the right thing. Clearly,
that's the good start for any lawyer. What about you, Dan? Did you draw any impressions? What were the names of the prosecutor and the defense?
The prosecutor's name was Barbara Serrano, and the defense attorney's name was Megan Collard. At least there were two, but the one that questioned the jury was Megan Collard.
Okay.
Can I ask a question? Was the defense private or public? Do you know?
I
couldn't figure it out. I actually looked later, but it was confusing.
They don't say. The jury will never say. I could look it up, but the jury will never find out. We could prejudice them one way or another.
I knew our guys were private in our courtroom.
How'd you know?
I think I looked them up.
Okay. did you look them up during the trial or afterwards?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Probably afterwards.
Yes, definitely afterwards. No,
but to answer your question, Ms. Collard said something, made some joke about how she wanted people to like raise their hands and speak up, and that if we didn't, then she would call us because she used to be a middle school teacher. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, that was kind of a dumb joke. Like, why would you say that?
That fell flat for you?
Yeah. She had actually told a lot of jokes during the trial that were sort of like kind of bad, but also sort of endearing. It was like, oh. You think that's funny. You're trying to win us over. And you kind of did, but not in the way you expected.
Like a clown who, you know, maybe is like an Ambien or something.
Yeah, like if she'd been like really funny, I might have found it even more irritating.
Like if you laughed, you'd have felt bad?
Yeah.
Because it wasn't respect for the process?
Yeah. Okay. Like the bad jokes were almost better.
Do you think courts and trials, is there a place for humor in them?
I mean, it's a big deal for the defendant. Like, it feels like we should be taking it seriously. I don't know. I was trying not to. I mean, there were times when I wanted to laugh during, but I felt bad for the guy that was on trial.
Yeah. How about Barbara? How'd she do?
Great. I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah. During the jury selection?
Yeah, I don't know. It's sort of hard to tell what they're looking for when they ask the questions, mm-hmm. but... I don't know.
Were you specifically asked any questions?
Yeah, I mean, there was the one about firearms, and I just answered that I was pretty anti-gun in general. Like, I didn't think the police should have them. I just don't think people should be walking around with guns.
Mm-hmm.
And, I don't know. I was just honest in that regard.
Okay. Do you remember specifically being asked any questions?
Just the one about, well, I mean, it wasn't, no questions were specifically targeted to somebody unless you answered. They had, like, yes or no questions.
Right, and then were you targeted after that point?
Yeah. So one of them was when I said I was a scientist and clarified that I wasn't really a scientist. but I don't think so other than that.
So let's move to the actual case you guys were deciding. Just really briefly, Dan, can you
like literally what
the... Yeah, what was it? He was charged with what?
Okay.
And so why was he charged? What happened to get him charged?
The charges were removing a serial number from a firearm and a concealed weapon without a concealed weapon permit.
Okay. And what was the context that they found this gun?
There was a running SUV parked by the side of the road, and somebody made a 911 call and said that there were some people sleeping or passed out in the car, and that they thought the police should come and check it out.
Okay. And when you heard the charges, and maybe you heard opening statements from the attorneys, did you have any initial thoughts at that point? Like, this guy is probably guilty, or I don't know where this is going, or this is scary. You know, what were your feelings at the time when you heard some of the facts of the actual case?
I was just curious. I didn't really have any opinions at that point. I just wanted to know more about the story.
You know, a lot of people say if they're on trial, they're guilty of something. You know, there's kind of this presumption that you wouldn't be in the position you're in unless you did something wrong. Did you have that feeling?
No, I went in it with a definite bias towards the defendant. I felt that I didn't want to pronounce somebody guilty unless I was really sure they'd done it.
Okay. What were the facts on yours, Brianna?
It was a manslaughter case, and actually a really sad story. The guy that died was a immigrant, 5 foot nothing, 100 pounds, had walked to a bar. He was in, I guess you'd call it a suburban area, between suburban and rural, walking along the side of the road, drunk as a skunk, like that. But it's not a crime to drink and walk. And a couple of high school kids pulled over to mess with him, and hit him, and he fell down in the street. And so those high school kids were charged. One was under 18 and was charged as a minor, and testified against the 18-year-old. And the guy that fell in the street was eventually run over by another couple of teens that were like good kids, and you know, it was a dark street without street lights.
And so he died.
Oh yeah. Yeah, he died. And the defendant was, you know, the guy who died was this guy who, you know, had pulled himself up by his bootstraps. And the defendant was a 300-pound, 6'5" football player. So you know, to say it would be a fair fight between the two.
So what were your thoughts when you heard that you were going to be deciding a case that there was a dead body?
You know, I think it was sad on so many levels, right? So you had both family members in there.
Yeah, but I'm talking about it just initially, your initial feelings when you heard the severity of the case.
You know, I think I was concerned about how gruesome it might be, and it wasn't until we started doing this recently that I remembered, oh yeah, we saw like pictures of brains splattered on the highway and stuff like that. But it was so matter of fact and clinical that it wasn't traumatic. I think the most traumatic moments for me were looking at the family members of both the defendant and the victim. Because, you know, whether you find the person guilty or not, you know, there's sadness on both sides of this kid did something stupid, and you know, all the stuff dealing with his family, and then the guy that died, you know, his family members were there and speaking through interpreters, and it was sad. There's nothing more you can say about that.
So, Dan, it's a firearm case, and you've got this maybe presumption of innocence, you know, you feel strongly about, and you want to hear what's going on. Tell me about, you know, the witnesses. The prosecution went first. They probably called some police officers. How did Barbara do? How did her witnesses do? How did it look to you?
I think she called all the relevant people. Like, she called two, so I mean, I could say who they were, the witnesses.
Well, like, what are their jobs? What are their titles?
Oh, well, there were two police officers.
Okay.
There was a fingerprint analyst, and then there was a like a public records person that worked for the Department of Licensing.
Okay. And did you get any impressions on the case based on how they came across the cops or the records people?
Well, the police just seem like average guys. There's kind of a couple of galoots. They didn't seem good or bad. They were just people. Like, okay. And then the fingerprint analyst seemed really, really competent and serious about her job. And the records person was very matter of fact, just like, yeah, this is somebody, the police called me. Yeah, I didn't really have much of an impression of him.
I assume at some point you took breaks, lunch break and afternoon break, morning break, whatever. What'd you guys talk about or do when you were on your breaks?
All kinds of stuff. We talked, there was the guy I talked to the most was like a middle-aged piano teacher. And I don't know, we talked a lot about like the history of the city and like, well, it's pretty wide-ranging conversations. Like,
Anything about the case?
No.
Yeah.
I mean, we had.
I know you were instructed not to, but I'm actually curious if that was followed.
Yeah, I mean, I think we did talk in general terms about maybe the justice system or something, but no specifics. We were pretty serious about that part.
So. Okay. So, Brianna, you were talking about, how sad the case was, how sad the facts were. Did you guys on breaks ever talk about, feelings or thoughts on the case, on the lawyers or anything?
I think we talked about, this is a lot to deal with or whatever, but I don't think we didn't talk about opinions about the case or anything like that. Actually, can I tell you my funny story about the case, about the talking to people?
Okay.
One of the things I do is give people career advice, and I got in the elevator, and somebody asked me where I was going to lunch, and I was like, oh, I don't know, do you want to go find lunch together? And it had been somebody else who said she was a scientist, and so I asked her what she did, and it turned out that she was a former president of like a major professional organization, and so at the time I had a gig where I was doing marketing for a professional organization, and I like chatted her up and got multiple speaking engagements out of that. So, when they tell you, like, at a networking talk, like, you never know when you're going to meet somebody, like, I was carrying business cards with me that day and actually gave them out. So, there you go. That's
so,
my...
So, because this kid, or this immigrant died, you were able to advance your career.
I'm really proud of that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand exactly how that works. Sometimes I could get advanced based on bodies. That's great.
Yeah, so... the prosecution, we saw their witnesses were a lot of 911 calls. You were talking about who the prosecution called on Dan's case. It was a lot of 911 calls and the cops and the forensics people. But the thing that kept happening was they kept not getting evidence admitted, and it was so frustrating to watch it. And then they would, conference up at the bench, and they would play white noise, so you really couldn't figure out what was going on. Just the staticky noise, which I understand they apparently don't do here.
They make sure the jury doesn't hear because they talk quietly or something, but yeah. Same difference.
It was really frustrating as somebody who wanted to be like, wait a minute, I want to know all the facts and I want to be unbiased. And
One of the reasons the evidence wouldn't come in was because it wouldn't let you be unbiased.
Well, right.
Yeah. It's bad evidence.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm still kind of curious sometimes to think about, like, what did we not learn about, related to the case? And the other witness that was really frustrating was the 17-year-old that had been charged as a minor. And I guess part of his plea bargain was that he would prosecute, or he would, testify against his friend. And, like, he just wasn't taking it serious at all. Like, he was like, he kept using this word, I smushed him, instead of, like, I hit him, I punched him. And so then the judge was trying to have, like, this clinical conversation about what does that word mean, And I've never heard it used since then or before then because apparently I'm not hip. But it's somewhere between a punch and a slap.
I don't know either.
I
guess we're not hip.
So that was weird.
Did you find out the details of his deal in the course of the trial?
I can't remember if I found them out. I think I did a bunch of research afterwards because I needed closure.
Okay.
So I don't know. I think I found them out online afterwards. Like, part of the agreement was that he was supposed to stay in college, a community college, and he dropped out, and then he was supposed to keep his job, and I don't know. He was the most disrespectful person in the courtroom, and I mean, it's a hard situation to be in testifying against your friend, right? So I guess I can't blame him for that. I don't know how I would behave if I was testifying against a friend of mine.
I'd probably take it seriously.
Yeah, I probably would. I'd take everything pretty seriously, so.
Except this podcast. I'm the host. I ask the questions. So, Dan, you heard the city's witnesses, the prosecution witnesses, and when they, you know, they said the city rests, did you have any thoughts at that point on the case? After they presented all their witnesses and all their evidence?
Yeah, I mean, I thought that everything was set up how it needed to be set up, and that I thought everyone was being really honest, and I didn't think anyone... I thought the police were just trying to be as accurate as they possibly could about what happened.
It didn't seem like they had an agenda.
Well, there was a video they played that showed it was the dash cam on the car, and I haven't really talked about like what took place, but
talk about whatever you want.
Sure. I mean, they basically, the two policemen came to the window of the SUV at the same time, looked inside, and were both sort of like, oh, he has a gun. And then they got their guns out, and, you know, it became this sort of like aggressive
situation. Come out with your hands up. You know.
Right, put your hands on the dash, and like somebody tried to do something, like, open the door. And, you know, they were like, open the fucking door. And one funny thing was that when the officer testified, they asked the first witness, they asked like what he'd said. And he said, I said, open the door and put your hands on the dash. And the defense was like very adamant that like, didn't you use some language that's, you know, and he was like, kind of like, well, I don't, you know, I said what I said, you know, just like, but I mean, you said, you dropped several F-bombs, and it's like it somehow became this like point of contention. I'm just like, why does anyone care about this? That's like all I could think. Like,
except it doesn't seem that professional on the part of a cop, right? Like, that's overly aggressive.
But it's a tense situation. Yeah. There's like a person with a gun. They like don't want to get shot. There's like there.
Was he holding the gun, or was it just sitting?
No, he was asleep, and the gun had like fallen between his legs.
So the best thing is to like drop a bunch of F-bombs and startle him. Like,
right. Well, I mean, I don't think they expected
kabam, this. Kabam.
They didn't expect to see a gun. I think they were startled and afraid. So, yeah. So and basically, I just thought, okay, you've laid
Dan,
out.
Dan, I'm going to cut that part out. The Seattle police are not pussies. I don't want you to say that again. That's gone. Almost stable to say.
No, just as far as the city's case, it was like, yes, everything was very cut and dried. It's clear that, you know, the guy's fingerprints were on the gun. Mm-hmm. It's clear that they did check to see that he had a license and he didn't. The only thing that was in doubt was whether the gun was concealed or not.
So the defense was able to cross-examine the witnesses.
Yeah.
How did she do? How did Megan do? She score points. Was her presentation?
I mean,
reasonable.
I felt she objected a lot, and I didn't really understand why she was objecting. It didn't seem like there. I didn't feel like the city said anything that was strange.
Did it feel petty, or did it seem like it weakened her own case?
It seemed petty. It seemed like she was just trying to appear strong or something. Mm-hmm. Like, kind of like, I just really didn't feel, like. Just from my perspective, everything that the prosecutor said that had nothing to do with the facts of the case had no effect on me at all. I was just like, why are you talking about like the scariness of guns, or like the fact that the officers swore, or like, or why is the defense talking about like the fact that the defendant was black or whatever?
So both sides brought in extraneous information.
It just didn't seem like yeah, lots of the stuff they were bringing up seemed to have no bearing on the case whatsoever.
Okay. I want to come back to that in a second, but I'm curious too, Brianna, when one of the lawyers was making objections or doing cross-examination, did you get the sense that it made sense, that it was purposeful, or did it just seem petty or trying to get somebody off their game, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, there's that defense lawyer that I just thought was so smarmy, and like he was like smirking the whole time, like he knew something we didn't know, and I don't know what it was. But yeah, and I don't remember specific objections or anything.
Did you guys get the impression that the lawyers were competent, that they're on their game, that they, I don't know, should be there? You know, they're serving their interests well?
Yeah, yeah.
I know you said you had one lawyer, the one of the defense lawyers just didn't talk or do anything.
I mean, I think she helped. It just seemed like she was like the assistant, helping her like get the papers she needed or whatever. But yeah, she didn't do very much that I could see during the trial.
But it wasn't like a negative that she was there?
No, she was just super quiet the whole time.
Okay. You had two defense lawyers and two prosecutors in yours. Did they share the work?
Yeah, everybody spoke. All of them spoke. Okay. Spoke.
And you don't have any, I know this is many years ago, but you don't have any particular memory of any of the lawyers like really dropping the ball or making you personally dislike them aside from the smarminess?
That, and I kept getting frustrated that the state couldn't get their evidence in because I wanted to hear these 911 calls.
Who did you blame for that? Did you blame the defense or the state or the judge?
I was so irritated at that darn defense lawyer. He really...
Did you feel, when the defense lawyer was making his objections, that it was grounded in law, that it made sense for his case, or was it just
I don't really remember any objections.
Well, there's some reason the evidence wasn't coming in.
Yeah, but I don't really remember. I don't remember that level of detail.
Okay. You were frustrated it wasn't coming in, though?
Yeah, just from the sake of, like...
But who were you frustrated with? The state for being bad at getting it in, or the defense for blocking it?
I think I was more frustrated with the law that said that evidence couldn't get in.
Okay.
Right? Because I think, you know, partially, and I guess this is partially voyeuristic, right? Like, I want to have all of the information, right? And I understand that that's not necessarily the best for the jurors to have all of the information and why you'd object to certain evidence coming in and all of the rules around that. But from the sake of, like, wanting to find the truth with the capital T, it's like, well, but I want to know when, and, you know, you're... These are really, you know, you're getting all these really slices of life, you know. There were a lot of families that testified that they'd seen it, and, you know, then it was like you'd hear them talk about their 911 call, and then, I don't know, I think the thought of being able to listen to a recording, like you said, you had dash cams. Like, we didn't have anything like that, and I think something about, like, that the ability to be in that moment and understand what was going on in that moment was appealing, right?
Yeah.
Of course, you saw pictures and that was what it was. It probably would have been more traumatic than anything, right, to hear 911 calls reporting a person dead in the road. Like,
did the defense in your case, Dan, put any witnesses on?
No.
Okay.
And they didn't have the defendant testify either.
Mm-hmm. Did you have any thoughts when the defense lawyer stood up and said, defense rests, just right away, without putting on any evidence? Were you surprised or disappointed?
Yeah, I was a little surprised. I was surprised. There wasn't that much to the case, so I guess it seemed like it was probably over anyway. And I didn't really, because... The defense lawyer had said something about, like, would you feel like that? I think her question was, can you think of any reason why somebody that was accused of a crime would not want to defend themselves? And I was like, yeah. And this is like during the
jury selection.
And I was like, yeah, I mean, what if you panic and like make yourself look terrible or like, I don't know, like, you have a lot on the line. Like, it just seems like it's hard to give a good account of yourself in that situation. Like, it's very stressful. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't look down on somebody at all that didn't want to testify on their behalf.
And in practice, was that still the case?
Yeah, when he didn't testify,
I know. I mean, you said in jury selection, oh, if someone doesn't testify, it's fine. I understand it. But then you actually are faced with that situation where someone didn't testify. And I was wondering if you still felt it made perfect sense or you were disappointed.
I didn't think that it really mattered that much what he had to say, to be honest.
Why is that?
Just because, first of all, he was asleep.
Sure.
I mean, what difference does it make? Like, we're just talking about, like, what the police perceived, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that had very little to do with the defendant. So, yeah, I don't think that there was really any context he could have given that would have made much difference to me. I was curious, but I didn't think it would help in me deciding the case.
Brianna, I'm curious if you remember, if you had thoughts on where you were leaning as the case progressed, like the state put on their witnesses, they gave an opening statement, if you had initial impressions on guilt, and if you remember changing that over the course of the trial one way or another.
You know, I think there was no dispute that this kid had been there, that he knocked the guy into the street, and that the guy died. Right, none of that was under dispute, and so I remember very much thinking like, "Ooh, that wasn't good." Like, I don't think you're supposed to knock people down in the street when they're drunk and leave them there. But very much thinking I needed to hear more about how manslaughter was defined,
mm-hmm.
for me to know whether that would fit that criteria, and to understand why that was the charge that was what we were supposed to find him guilty of. And we didn't hear any witnesses from the defense either, so that was an interesting similarity.
It's more common than people think.
Oh,
it's
really?
Like more common than on TV, that's for sure.
So the state rested, and
do you know why?
Because they have nothing good to say.
I mean, that's not totally wrong, but you said that the purpose of the jury was to find the truth with a capital T, and that's not the case. The question for the jury is just whether the prosecution
proved their case
beyond a reasonable doubt. So if they didn't do that, and when they present all their evidence and all their witnesses, why would you put up your own person?
Yeah.
Like, why give them more chances to put more evidence out there?
Well, and I think, you know, I don't think that I really thought my duty was to find the truth with a capital T, but I think whenever you're, like, learning about something, that's kind of what you want to know is the truth with a capital T, like what's going on in that situation or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I have a different appreciation now after you've been doing this work for several years and of the gray area that's involved in a lot of this and you know, the rights of defendants. I think I have a different appreciation for that. I don't. So.
Hey, honey. Can we just call them what they are? Criminal scum?
Yeah, basically. Criminal scum that pay our bills. So the state rested, and we were sent into the...
So your issue was, the facts were pretty clear, but you want to know what the law said, whether that was actually a crime, what happened, and whether it was admit the crime that he was charged with. Is that right? You knew, I mean, there was no question what happened, it was just whether it was a criminal or not.
Yeah. Well, I don't think it was criminal. I think whether it was criminal or not, I think the question was whether it rose to the level of manslaughter or not.
Sure. Was there any dispute on yours about the facts?
Well, so this is gun, right? I mean, the main thing was whether it was concealed or not. And both police officers sat in a chair in front of the jury box and put the gun, the same gun that they saw, between their legs like they saw it. Right.
Okay.
But the thing was, the clip was in the gun, and
in the van or in the jury box.
In the van. In okay. the real world, when they saw it, the clip was inserted in the gun.
Okay.
And when they were on the stand, they had the clip and the gun were in different evidence bags,
mm-hmm.
and there was a zip tie on the clip, so they couldn't put the clip in the gun.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they do that on purpose because it's.
They don't want to load a gun into the courtroom?
Well, it didn't have bullets in it, but
okay.
Anyway. So they were trying to show us what it looked like,
yeah.
But they had to put the clip on the side of the gun because they couldn't load it. So it actually looked much more obvious when they were testifying than I think that probably did in real life.
So it helped their case that they couldn't put it together?
It hurt the city's case that they couldn't put it together.
Okay.
And because also that we weren't looking through a window of a van.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, it was actually for you two, because I asked you guys about this beforehand, that you both had changes in the charges before you made a verdict. So, Dan, you said originally there was charges of a serial number and a concealed weapon. And what happened with the charges there?
Well, after the first day, after the second day. So the first day was when we went in, we just did jury selection. The second day was when we heard testimony. In the beginning of the third day, they told us that they had dropped, so before closing, they dropped the removing identification charge.
Okay. So all you had to decide was whether it was concealed or not?
Right.
Okay. Do you know why they dropped it?
I assume because they couldn't prove that the guy that had the gun had done it.
Yeah, okay.
Was that accurate? I mean,
I couldn't have said that he did it.
Okay. And I know a little bit about what happened with yours, but I'd like you to tell us, but I don't actually know the order of events. So can you kind of tell us when the charges changed and how you learned about that and what prior to the trial that occurred?
Yeah, so on day 3 in the morning, the state rested, and we went back in the jury room for a while. And just sat there. And it was pretty early in the morning, I think, that they rested. And so we sat there for a while, and, you know, you're wondering what's going on. Eventually they came in and sent us to lunch. And
so, like, the whole day? You were just in the jury room for, like, 3 hours?
So that was the whole morning, and then we went to lunch and came back. And then they sent us back in the jury room, and we're like, we'll come get you. It was about 4 o'clock by the time they came and got us.
So pretty much the whole day.
Pretty much the whole day we just sat in the jury room. And by the time they got us at 4 o'clock... they told us that the defense was not going to call any witnesses and that the charges had been changed from manslaughter to reckless endangerment.
Okay. And this was before closing statements?
Yeah.
Okay. And so since the defense wasn't calling any witnesses, it was jury instructions and closing statements?
Yeah.
Was it that day at 4 o'clock?
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe it wasn't at 4 o'clock. By the time we got back to the jury room after closings and everything, it was like 4:45.
Did you guys have a chance to process this information, or was it just like, here's what's happening, we're going?
I mean, I think it was, yeah, it was time to switch gears, and this is what we're going to do.
Okay, so you went to closing statements, and how did that go?
I don't remember it that clearly, but I think...
closing argument, were they, do you remember persuasiveness or anything? Did you have your mind made up at that point? Because you had you had a sense of the law at that point.
I think the thing to think about in this case is that I think, you know, I was trying to process what reckless endangerment meant, and I remember having discussions about that in the jury room, but it had gone from what on the surface is a very serious charge of manslaughter down to reckless endangerment, and as a lay person, just hearing the term reckless endangerment, I was like, yeah, that's pretty reckless that you left a guy in the street. It was pretty easy to understand that charge and why that could be something he was charged with versus the manslaughter, where it was very much an open question of how do you define manslaughter, right?
Whether he was responsible for the death.
Right.
Yeah. So, let's just keep going with you then. You hear about the new charges. There's closing. It sounds like you, I don't know if the whole jury, but it sounds like you kind of have this predisposition that maybe he wasn't responsible for the death, but he certainly acted recklessly, and it seemed to fit more with what you thought the facts of the case were. Like, you were sure that was a good fit. You weren't sure about manslaughter, but you were sure reckless endangerment was a good fit.
I'm not sure I was initially convinced, but it was a much easier sell.
Yeah.
On the surface that... because the facts that he hit a guy and left him in the street weren't disputed,
right?
You know, I think it would have been a whole different case if the two kids had disputed whether, you know, nobody was arguing that this little man was hitting them and trying to beat them up, right? Like, they got out of their car and started beating a guy up, like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, kids are dicks. So... I want to hear about the jury room.
You know, I remember having some good conversations in there. There were definitely some people that were...
What was the first thing you guys did when you sat down there after the other closing?
I don't remember.
Okay.
But there were 12 of us, which I can only imagine it's a little bit harder to come to consensus with 12 instead of 6.
You get 12 for felonies and 6 for misdemeanors.
And we had an alternate. I think she was dismissed. Actually, maybe she was allowed to be in the jury room, but was dismissed after we said we had a verdict. I don't know. But
you said you had some good conversations.
We had some good conversations. There was some people that didn't participate in the conversations, and I think were just like didn't really care on some level.
Why do you say that?
Because when we got back in the, you know, we all had to say yes, we found the one way, and she just kind of mumbled her answer, and the judge had to ask her to clarify again.
Oh, I mean, why do you think she didn't care?
Oh, why do I think she didn't care? You know, frankly, from other conversations we had with her that week, I think she had a lot of other shit on her plate, right? Like, she was had a low-income background and had kids, and, you know, it was just, like, not her top priority. But she also had been quiet all week. Like, didn't really talk to us. I mean,
Was there any serious discussion about reckless endangerment?
There was, and, at one point, we'd actually formed a question that we wanted them to clarify something, and, you know, we had instructions that we could write it down and pass it to the judge and then wait for a response. And in between the time we'd asked that question and when they'd gotten a response, we all decided. I think the thing of it, too, is I think it was a little awkward, and I don't know if I would say, like, irresponsible to send a jury to go deliberate at 4:45 in the afternoon. Like, everybody wants to get home at that point in the day. Like, I think the conversation could have been more nuanced if they were like, we're going to come back in the morning and you guys are going to deliberate.
Yeah.
But there was very much this, like, hey guys, we could wrap this up today kind of attitude. And we were supposed to originally come back for a full another day. So it was a surprise that we could,
you could get out of that free, that lunch you owed people.
That was how I got my free lunch.
We
got
to vote, guys. We got to vote now.
So we ended up finding him guilty of reckless endangerment. And, you know.
Was there anybody, do you remember, like, arguing for not guilty on that?
I don't think people were really arguing for not guilty. I think it, again, came down to this little, let's understand the charge and understand if these actions fall within those constraints. And
that's a pretty smooth consensus.
Yeah. You know, again, that one woman, I'm not really sure that she was entirely on board. But she didn't want to vocalize an argument that she wasn't on board. I just don't think she was that engaged.
Okay. So, Dan, you heard closing. Did you have any thoughts in your head after the close of evidence, but before the lawyers made their final arguments?
I thought that the state hadn't, I thought that they did their best, but I didn't think they had a very good case. In the video, the police reacted really quickly, mm-hmm. and they both saw the gun, and I don't know, it just seemed like it wasn't concealed. Like, I had kind of a strong opinion before closing.
Yeah.
What
was the pitch from Barbara about why this person was guilty?
I don't know if she was very strong in her. She was more just like, here's what you have to decide. We know that, you know, these are the facts. I think she did assert that it was a concealed weapon, but
do you think she didn't really believe it at that point? Or do you think she saw the writing on the wall?
I think she saw the writing on the wall. I think she knew that, you know, she'd done her job, but, like, there just wasn't that much there.
How did the defense do on their closing, if they're in the lead?
Well, you know, I was talking about the dumb jokes that the defense...
Yeah.
So...
I've told a joke in trial before, so now I'm very self-conscious. They're knocking out of the park funny, but still...
She very, very pointedly, you know, she sort of paused, gathered herself, very pointedly picked a banana... up off her table.
I never use props, I'll tell you that.
Put the banana in her pocket and then calmly walked up to the jury box. and you know talk sort of the same thing. These are the facts. If there's no concealment, it's not guilty. You know, sort of like, yes, okay, tell us what we already know. And then she was like, you guys have been looking at this banana the whole time. Like this sort of like very self-satisfied, like, yeah, I was thinking like, I can't believe you're making this joke right now. It was weird. It was like this weird bit of theatricality. I mean, you know, it certainly threw me off. Like these bad jokes that she told. I don't know if it served her purpose, but
were you like, I'm definitely not guilty before she started, and then she's like, I'm like 80% now. Like, you're lucky I'm still pretty confident, but you could have hurt your case.
Yeah, but yeah, whatever.
Well, now I'm curious. When did you first realize there's a banana in the courtroom?
Well, I mean, after the prosecutor... After the prosecutor was done with her closing statement, we all looked at the defense, and then we saw her picking the banana up.
So did you see her take a banana out of her briefcase or whatever to put it on the table? Be like,
I don't remember that, okay. No.
You just
but if you saw it, you would just think it was like a snack, right?
No one's eating in the closing argument in a trial.
I actually tried to avoid looking at the defense table the whole time because the defendant looked really sad. I like didn't want him to like get false hope from my face or something.
Yeah, that's a thing. I'm looking at juries all the time trying to believe in their thing. So did you double take when you saw the banana? You're like, what is going on with this banana?
No, because she'd already told terrible jokes, so I knew.
Did she actually say, is this a banana in my pocket? Did she go there?
No, after she introduced the banana as part of her closing, she was like, she put it in her so she had a jacket on. Yeah. So she initially had it in her jacket pocket, and then she took it out and put it in her pants pocket and put her jacket over the banana. It's like, this is concealed. And then she took it out and she put it back, and it's like, this is not concealed.
You know, I would even get that if there was no prop or there's no actual weapon in the case, but you had the gun. You could have done it with a real gun. You don't need to get fruit involved in this. That's funny. So... they close, judge says, take your time, do what you need to do. What happens when you go back to the jury room?
Well, first of all, the bailiff told us...
I'm sorry about the defense lawyer. Personally apologize.
Yeah. No, the bailiff just said...
I forgot to ask, who was the judge?
Edward McKenna.
Okay.
His name.
Okay.
He was a very soft-spoken...
Yeah, he was one of my earlier interviews on the podcast.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. No, he apologized for it. And then actually during the trial, the Blue Angels, during the jury instructions, the Blue Angels flew over while he was talking.
Mm.
That was fun. but he...
What did he apologize for?
Just how quiet he was.
Okay.
And that we might not be able to hear him. And if they couldn't hear him, then we should...
Was that ever a problem that he couldn't hear him?
Well, no, not really. No. I mean, everyone was very quiet, so you could hear him.
Okay. So sorry I interrupted. You went to the jury room.
Went to the jury room. The bailiff told us not to talk about the case because she had to get some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just sitting there kind of like, we'd gotten a lot of instructions not to talk about it, and it was sort of awkward.
Still.
We thought that we were going to get to talk to her about it, and then she's like, no, not
whoa,
yet.
Whoa, hold on.
So we're just kind of like, and then she brings in the evidence, And then there was like a problem with the phone. She was like, oh, you should call me. And I was like, I'm going to make sure this actually works. And I like picked up. I'm like, it's dead. So, yeah. She's like, just use your cell phone. Yeah. So then she left. And then we're kind of looking at each other like, no, I guess we actually get to talk about the case now.
Yeah. And were people good about that for the other case? Lunches and stuff in the parks? No one was talking about the case while it was happening?
No.
Yeah. Good. So you felt... that the city was in trouble.
Yeah.
Did your people in the jury agree with you?
It was hard, I think, but I was basically trying to like, so I wasn't the foreman,
mm-hmm.
and we had elected a foreman just sort of at random. Because nobody spoke up and said they wanted to be the foreman.
Who would do that? I'll be the foreman. I'll take this on.
No, and
sounds
and,
so pretentious.
And but
this needs the foreman work that I can provide.
But then I found that when we were deliberating, I had this very strong urge to like, you know, like sort of like wrestle people, you know, like be like, I, like clarify what people had said, like, mm-hmm. oh, you disagree with this, like, do you agree with this, like, and like I wanted.
Well, walk me through it. How are you guys approaching topics and issues?
First we read the law.
Okay.
That they provided to us, like the excerpt. I'm sure it wasn't the whole thing, but yeah, we just read through it and just sort of like, what is a concealed weapon? And it was actually fairly vague.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was like, it said something about like through ordinary observation or something like that. Ordinary observation. And we're like, these are police officers who are like looking for a gun. I mean, that's because, you know, if you're like approaching a car and you don't know anything, it's like, aren't you looking? Like, I would assume if I was a police officer or anyone, I'd be like, is there a gun?
Is it safe? Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't think I would have noticed a gun if I'd been like walking by the car and like looked inside or just briefly. But I mean, these guys were like going up to the car and looking inside and like, is there a weapon in there? Like, I'm sure that was a thought.
Yeah. So they were incapable of ordinary observation just by their training?
Yeah, I don't think. And there was also this, the sort of the thing about, why does a man have a gun between his legs pointed at his crotch? Oh, unloaded, by the way.
Okay.
I didn't mention that. Which is irrelevant to the police because they just see a gun.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's sort of like, does concealment imply like intent to conceal? Like, and that actually, we couldn't tell. It was hard to tell whether that was part of the law. So we talked about that too, about whether he had meant to conceal it. And I was like, well, if it was just sitting on his lap and he fell asleep, it's heavy. It could have just like slid between his legs. And if it was, and I was like, if it was sitting on his lap, would it be concealed? And people were just like, I guess not. Like, It was hard to nail people down on that.
Well, that's kind of like where I'm coming at it. It seemed like you had some strong opinions going into it that the city just didn't get there on your case. And were you trying to wrangle other people to your point of view?
I couldn't tell. I didn't want to wrangle people if they weren't in opposition to my view. I wanted to know what people's views were to start with.
And were people just being cautious by sharing them?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit.
So when did it kind of reach the crescendo and you guys made a formal decision?
Well, I think the foreman was just sort of like, not the foreman, but because everyone was sort of like taking charge in various situations, and which seemed to irritate the official foreman. But
give me my power.
You guys selected me randomly and I take this responsibility seriously.
But you know, sort of like, hey, let's just vote, let's just poll everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sort of like, it doesn't even have to be binding, like you can change your mind after you, but I just wanted to know if we all agreed.
Yeah.
And eventually we got people to do it. I wanted to do it twice. Like, I wanted to do it before we talked about it and after. But, yeah, everyone was just, like, not guilty.
Okay.
Like, after we read the...
How long do you think you were in the room total?
Like, half an hour.
Okay.
I mean, we, like...
Brianna, how long do you think you were in there?
No more than half an hour.
Was it kind of a similar thing? Like, you read the law and then you guys just kind of came to this focal point of agreement?
I don't remember them giving us a paper copy of the law.
Really?
They might have, I don't remember.
Okay, that's fine.
You know, I think we talked about it and eventually came to agreement. I think it's also interesting to think about the difference between having 6 people in a room and having 12 people in a room.
Because
mm-hmm. 6 people, it's easier for everybody to get a chance to speak versus 12 people.
You said there's one person who didn't really want to speak, didn't care that much. Did it feel like other people wanted to say more and they weren't being allowed to?
Oh, yeah, because I think everybody's just relieved to find, like you said, like, oh, good, we finally get to talk about like this. You know, you spend that number of days thinking about something that's that serious.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I want to talk about this and I want to, you know, I haven't been able to talk to anybody about this. And I am somebody that likes to talk and presses my feelings through talking.
Right,
so,
of course.
I wanted to talk about it.
Do you know how I process my feelings? What are feelings? I don't understand the question.
I think it would have been different, too, had we gone into it and the charge been reckless endangerment from the get-go. I really think there's something psychological about going from something.
You know, Seattle recently changed their law from patronizing a prostitute to, this is just the name of the law, everything else is the same. They've changed the name of it from patronizing a prostitute to sexual exploitation. And I don't know, like, they're doing it because they want to be serious about, you know, human trafficking and everything else. But I don't know if it's going to backfire and people are like, oh yeah, he patronized the heck out of that prostitute. But did he sexually exploit her? You know, it was like a transaction between two adults, you know, an illegal one, but exploitation. So I don't know. It's interesting you say that because...
Well, and this is a little bit different because I'm not just talking about the nomenclature.
Well, yeah, but it is interesting that the name of the law doesn't matter. Like, it can be Law 46 Beta, and, you know, it's whatever the law says is what matters, right? The title is just something that we use as a shorthand. But it clearly had some effect on you. Like, well, you had a feeling like, yeah, that was reckless.
Well, and I'm saying that in retrospect of this was years ago. I don't remember exactly how it was defined in that particular jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying, going from... It was clear that reckless endangerment was a lesser charge than manslaughter.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, when you've been spending several days preparing to find him guilty or not guilty on manslaughter, to then say, well, yeah, you know, that did seem really serious. Maybe it wasn't that serious, guys. Maybe it's only this little thing. It's like, oh, yeah, yeah, it was that little thing. You know, like,
yeah,
it was a lot easier to find him guilty of that.
It's clear that there is some arrangement that happened with the lawyers to let that deal happen. But did the defense seem kind of conceding at that point? Or did they still fight and say, no, he's not even reckless endangering anybody?
I think they were still fighting. I think they still had some hope. Clearly, it was a win to get the charges reduced.
Yeah.
So it was, at that point, I think there was some discussion. But like I said, I also think, we could have had a more nuanced discussion if it wasn't, like, the very end of the day. And I feel like I kind of got the impression that, like, the court was like, you guys could just wrap this up and we could all go home. You know, and maybe it's just that so many of the other jurors felt that way. But I would have happily gone back the next day and, like, talked about it some more.
Yeah, you got free parking.
Yeah, free parking.
But don't forget the lunch thing. Yeah.
But $15.
Yeah.
That's
interesting. I think it's interesting on a lot of levels. Did the lawyers talk to you, Brianna, after the verdict?
No, you know, after the verdict, everybody was getting their paperwork, like their little notes to take back to their employer. And the only person I talked to was the victim's brother. So, you know, the mom was crying with the defendant. And the victim's brother was saying, you know, gracias, thank you, to everybody as they left. So I said, lo siento, I'm sorry.
It's the only Spanish you know, so it's cool you have the opportunity to say it.
I was practicing for that.
Well, where is the library? I just went to the floor.
You know, in that moment, clearly he had just relived something that was really sad, and sitting through the trial, he'd been sitting there the whole time, he testified. But also, you know, I'm sorry you went through this. I'm sorry this kid isn't being found guilty of something, I don't know, better.
Yeah.
You know, but it was sad.
This is a conversation I have with people, some jurors, some non-jurors. It's just like, oftentimes some tragedy occurred. It doesn't mean that crime occurred, but yeah, something bad happened, and it's, you know, okay to accept that this was something unfortunate. And yeah, I mean, your feelings and the feelings of the people around it. The mom's defendant is unhappy, the brother of the victim's unhappy, you know, there's this, like, not everyone's going to be leaving with a smile on their face.
No, and nobody was leaving with a smile on their face with a guilty verdict, and nobody would have been leaving with a smile on their face with a not guilty verdict. You know, arguably the defendant would have been happier.
Yeah.
It's just
a messy tragedy. I mean, a crime occurred also, but it was also just an unfortunate thing that happened.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's the same thing, sometimes you're not.
I have thoughts, too, about the fallout after going home that day.
Okay.
But I can talk about that later. Go for it. Just, you know, I continued to think about it. So I looked up the kid, and, you know, part of it was I wanted to see when he'd been sentenced to what he was sentenced for. I felt like I needed to know that. In looking up court records, I actually found all of this really, like, messy stuff about his parents' divorce and everything, and all the court stuff that had been around that. And, you know, I think that gave a different perspective of, like, okay, well, this kid, he'd been a football player at this really fancy elite school, but he was there on scholarship, and his parents had been having custody issues and just really nasty stuff. I'm like, you know, it brings another level of complication. That kid's life wasn't great either, you know. He got 5.5 months. I never followed up to see what did he serve.
And he did do a prison romance with him, right? Visit him every day.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know that there's anything that could make that situation right in the end. But, I think it makes it a little more sad and brings a little bit more perspective to when shit's going on in your life, you act out and maybe do something that causes pain to other people, right? I don't know. Not that everybody does that, but, like, people don't just do nasty, mean things to other people out of nowhere.
There's less sociopaths in the world and more people with troubled backgrounds.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that helped me understand what happened a little bit more. The funny thing was getting a letter from the judge that was like, and I don't know if they send these to everybody. It was a form letter for sure.
Probably send it right.
But like, thank you for your service to the court. And like,
you will not be called again for, right? They say that too. Sometimes the letters say,
I don't remember
you, will, you will not be called again
I
for like
2 years.
I remember
being personally thanked for everything I did to uphold justice.
Dictated but not read.
Yeah, and I think I was like, do I throw this letter out? Do I keep it?
Am I breaking a law? Is there going to be a jury if I don't frame this letter?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, I don't know.
Whatever is the letter now?
I think I threw it out. I really hope I threw it out.
Whoa. We can't publish this. Statute of limitations on throwing out a judge's letter is like 20 years, dude. A personal thank you from a judge? That's a felony. In Maryland, that's a hyper felony. What are you doing, Brianna?
We have moved several times since then, so I really hope I threw that piece of paper out.
We could have another podcast about the things you've chosen not to throw out through our moves, but we'll save that for another time. Dan, when you guys reached a verdict, you went back in the courtroom. What was the process there?
Oh, well, they just gave us so that like the process for communicating and everything.
Communicating it, being brought, who said it.
So she gave us a form letter before we started deliberating. It was like, so write your verdict in this part, mm-hmm. and then when you go into court, then just the judge will direct you to read the letter, and then you say that what you found, and don't tell me.
Yeah,
that's what the bailiff said. and then we called her when we reached our verdict, and she
Tanya.
Yeah, Tanya.
Yeah, I like Tanya.
Yeah.
She's funny.
Yeah, she is super nice. She let us back in, and we just read the verdict. Wait, what? Yeah, anyway, so we read the verdict, and then the defendant was like, looks at us and was like, thank you.
Just out loud in court?
Yeah.
That's cool.
So it was not guilty.
It was not guilty, yeah.
And did the lawyers talk to you afterwards?
Yes.
How'd that go?
I thought it was weird.
Yeah.
I was like, why are you... Like, so this prosecutor, Barbara Serrano, she's, like, very professional, like, very well put together, and, like, seemed to know what she was doing. And to have her, like, come into our room and, like, sit down and, like, ask for feedback was just, like, it seems like you know what you're doing. Like, it seems like you're being, like, expected to do this or something. Like, it was like a...
I don't think so. I think... You always want to get better, and if there's any way, like you might think you did a good job, or you might think you did a bad job, but the people, your audience, is the one who's going to tell you what worked and what didn't.
I just was basically like, I just don't think you had a very good case,
mm-hmm.
and she was like, the law is very, very vague. It's not very well written, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I just think it was a really hard thing for you to prove.
At that point, did you just want to go home, or did you
no.
want to continue
no,
to
they
engage
asked,
on the topic?
No, they didn't say we had to stay there. Yeah. They're like, if you want to stay and talk. And I was like, oh, yeah. Because I thought it would be kind of a weird, like, awkward little moment.
Did Judge McKenna come in, too?
He did. And he's basically just asked us how the amenities were and everything. And he also said, if you had a good time, or not good time, if you enjoyed
our stripper facilities,
basically,
please
if,
tip your server.
If we enjoyed the experience, that we should tell our friends and acquaintances and family about it, because
that's why we're doing this podcast.
Because
he asked me to talk to you.
No. And he said apparently because people just ignore jury summons,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, Really? He said something. I think he said something like only 10% of people respond. Or
no,
I've heard 15, but yeah,
really
low.
Like,
well, to be fair, some of them are bad addresses. Oh, like, sure. People have moved, but yeah, some people just throw it away. They're like, I don't want to deal with it. Some people really can't afford taking the time off. That's a real.
But
thing.
It's not like an option.
Apparently, it is.
The problem is, if you start arresting people for not doing jury duty, you don't have the resources to do it, and it's just going to discourage people.
Oh,
people.
But couldn't you just fine them?
And who will the jury be for the people? That are
It doesn't work. Like, yes, it's a civic duty. You can obligate people to do it. No, what's funny is there have been stories of jurisdictions. I don't know if it happened in Seattle, maybe, but places where not enough people responded to their summons. So few people responded that the bailiff would go down to the street during lunch hour and just start pulling people in. The court would say, "You have jury duty. You have jury duty. Call your boss and tell him you're not going to come in this afternoon." And that's totally allowed because you can conscript people for jury duty, which is what you were. Got a letter. You were conscripted. You didn't have a choice. And, you know, it doesn't come up often, and people are always offended to hear that they can do that, but that's the deal. You know, we get this free society, but you got to do your part. But, yeah, they don't have the resources. I mean, maybe somewhere they prosecute people, but it's just a huge waste of resources. Like, there's a lot of crimes that don't get prosecuted because they don't have the resources to do it, and this would be the lowest of the low.
Do you know, the funny thing, when I had jury duty, myself, my sister and her husband had all moved back to Maryland, within a couple months of each other, and we all got called for jury duty, like, in short order. Like, they were just hitting all the people who just moved to town, and I don't know if they were trying to get fresh blood or what, but, yeah.
I can tell you, I've never been called for jury duty, and I feel jealous of both of you.
Well, and I think about that, because it was an interesting and valuable experience, yeah, and, like, and now I have to be like, yeah, my husband's a criminal defense lawyer, like...
He's the best lawyer in the state, I'm sorry, someone has to be.
No, do you know what, when I went to go see that trial with you a few years ago, I don't know if you remember this, but one of the potential jurors was friends with Burns Peterson, who's, I don't know what his title is, but he's a mentor of yours, and... then there was just, like, this conversation about, oh, how do you know Burns? What's your friendship like? And his wife's a judge, right? So then they were talking about the judge. And, like, it was this, like, fun conversation about everybody having about this small world.
So here's a funny thing. I don't know if this is all going to make it on the podcast, but one of my mentors in the criminal defense field, Jeff Cohen, he had a trial, a big trial, in Superior Court a month or so ago. And one of the members of his jury was the husband of the presiding judge of Seattle Municipal Court. So he's not a lawyer, the husband, but his wife is a high-ranking judge in the courthouse you were in. And it's just it's a small community. Mm-hmm. You know, jury duty is an interesting thing where people from all walks of life come together, but at the same time, not everybody does. And the city's not that big. You're going to see people that you know and relationships and connections, you know, one degree removed. So.
But they didn't end up sitting the guy.
No.
And I think about that now. Like, I probably won't get to do it again. That I think I bring a good perspective of, you know, whatever.
I think that you will probably never be on a criminal trial, but you might be on a civil one.
Sure.
I don't think I'll be on a trial, period. It's possible, but I don't think it's likely. Yeah. So I guess that's my next question. Have you did it?
Really very few downsides other than this, like, something I still think about, that poor kid, right? Like, that poor family every now and again when it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, somebody has to do it.
Did it feel interesting for, like, this is a real-life crime novel thing, or was it interesting, like, I am doing my civic duty and America's greater for my work? Did it feel patriotic?
You know, it was interesting from a voyeuristic perspective, right? Like, it'd be out of character for me to not admit that it was voyeuristic and interesting on that level. But I think also interesting for thinking, knowing more about how our system works, right? Like, I think they can teach you as much as they want in civics class or whatever, but I think you have a different understanding sitting in the classroom or sitting in the jury.
Seeing it play out in real life.
Yeah.
What about you, Dan? Did you have any regrets about doing it?
No.
Let me ask you this. Did you talk to the defense lawyer at all? Barbara went in there. Did the defense lawyer go in there too to talk to you? And did you have feedback for her?
Yeah, but I think I was maybe nicer than I should have been.
Should I send her this podcast so she can get the world skinny?
I don't think she did a bad job. I just I might have said something about, like, the things you said that had, that were sort of, I don't know if I said theatrical, but the things you said that had nothing to do with the facts of the case were boring to me, basically. Like, I don't...
Yeah, it's funny, because you've mentioned, I don't know who, people brought up race, they brought up thoughts on guns, and you just brought it up only to say that people brought it up at some point, but you seem to have no interest in your decision whatsoever.
I think they just wanted to know if people would, since the defendant was black, I think they were just trying to weed out racists. But who admits to being racist, for God's sake?
It's like, an art to find the racists in the group, yeah.
So, I just...
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's like, it's, you are concerned that people are not going to tell the truth in there, in that panel. So it really is curious, or it's interesting to me as a lawyer, to hear if you guys have, you know, preconceived notions or feelings on whether to share your true thoughts or whether to hide them for whatever reason.
I mean, I did want to be on the case. Like, I had that motivation.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, I don't know.
Was the first question they asked you who's excited to be here?
No.
Mm-hmm. It's a common one from them.
Because you want people to be excited?
You actually don't. If they're, like, too excited, they won't. They, like, they're too biased.
I have a...
You want, like, fives.
I have a preternatural appearance of calm. People think I'm bored or calm or sleepy or confused all the time.
You okay, Dan? You need a little pick-me-up, buddy?
So, I don't think anyone would... I don't think I would ever be dismissed from a jury for being too excited.
Okay.
You know, there was one woman, now that you say that, there was one woman during jury selection who just kept talking and answering every question, and
was
like...
Was it Brianna?
No. But I remember everybody being really relieved when they dismissed her. Like, the judges, the judge, the lawyers, and the other potential jurors.
I did a trial with Jeff a couple of years ago, a felony sex case, pretty serious, and one of the people on the panel was a lawyer, and he didn't do criminal work. Someone I didn't know before, but he was absurdly smug and pretentious, and, you know, we asked him if he could be fair, and he had more knowledge of the law than other people did, and he said, I think that I would just be spending a lot of time judging the other lawyers about how good or bad they were doing at trial work than I would be thinking about, like, the facts of the case or the law. I was like, oh, you're a dick. And then, like, nobody wanted him. Like, nobody wanted him. And I tried to get him kicked off because he said he couldn't be fair. And the judge was like, oh, he could be fair. He's fine. And so we were going to kick him off because you get challenges to kick people off for basically any reason. And we were going to use one. And I said, don't even bother. The prosecution's going to waste it on him because there's no way they're going to let this guy on. And it was totally right. And the prosecutor's like, you got to go. He's like, it's such a funny thing. It's like these people, I mean, you know, I deal with lawyers all the time, but just the jury selection process is just so interesting. There's so many different personalities and different backgrounds, and it's kind of artificial. Tell me how you feel about that to complete strangers about something you probably don't think about that often, like race and murder, you know.
Okay.
It's just all very interesting to me, intellectually.
But I think the cultural narrative around jury duty is interesting too, kind of along that same vein. Like, I remember childhood stories of, like, some family friend who was getting called for jury duty, and she was gonna, like, paint her nails a crazy color and, like, say some things so that she didn't have to sit. And it's like, you're already there, just like...
In 30 Rock, Liz Lemon dressed up as Princess Leia to try to get out of it.
I don't understand that mentality. Maybe it's just I'm not devious enough, but, like, I don't know, I fell with the rules. I don't know. Why would you not want to do it? You're already there at that point.
Well, let me answer your question. No, I just found myself thinking.
I'm the host. I answer the questions.
I'm so glad that I get my full salary.
Yeah.
And thinking, like, somebody that didn't, this would be, like, or just, like, nothing, or, like, very, or, like, a small percentage
of their
salary.
People, like, who are car dealers, right? Their salary is what they make.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's a totally different story. You know, even you're self-employed. Even if you were to, for whatever reason, get put on some jury because somebody made a bad decision somewhere, like, that would be time that then you had to spend away from the family later to catch up on the work you didn't do that day.
I could do it a few days, but like a month-long trial, which happens, uh-huh. I don't think I could do it. I'd like to do it, but I don't think I could.
There was a woman who worked night shift that was called for jury duty, and she's like, I don't think I can stay awake. And then judge is like, yeah, we're going to.
Yeah. There's things. Like, it's again, it's this reality of the people's lives intersecting with this kind of artificial technical process.
Well, and I totally don't. There's totally a class element involved, and I'm not disagreeing with that. But, you know, I think this attitude isn't just among people who can't afford to be there.
Yeah.
You know?
There's definitely some people who are just like, I don't work for free. I don't want to be involved in this. You know. Yeah, there's a lot of different. You get a lot of retirees because they do have the time.
Yeah.
It's just the nature of it. So if you were called again, you would happily serve. Your experience in Seattle Municipal Court was positive.
Yeah. Well, although I will say I'd be less excited than I was the first time.
Sure.
Yeah.
Do you feel that because it was a not guilty verdict, that the case should never have gone to trial in the first place?
I think it was a waste of time.
You think the prosecution just should have dropped it?
Yeah, I don't really understand why they felt it should go to trial.
Did you talk about that at all when they came afterwards?
No.
Okay.
I mean, it was very strange to be in the room with the lawyers kind of critiquing what they did. Like, it felt like such a...
Because they should be the experts, or...
I don't know. Like, it was such a... It felt like such a... This is going to sound weird, but, like, kind of like a noble thing. Almost... This is weird.
Would it be different if they just gave you, like, a comment card and you didn't have to say it to their faces?
Yeah.
How was your server?
Yeah, it felt like they were all part of something important, and then we were reducing it to the level of a customer service experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. But the flip side is, how else are they going to get better unless they ask people who just observe them?
Well, it's interesting. I'm wondering if it's different in different jurisdictions, because that definitely didn't happen when I had jury duty, that we were asked if we wanted to talk to the lawyer.
I don't know in Maryland specifically, but I'm told that pretty traditionally lawyers are allowed to talk to jurors afterwards to get their thoughts on the case and the lawyers' performances. And the juries don't have to do it. They're not required, but they can give feedback if they want to. I find it very valuable.
Yeah.
I love you.
I know if I had been asked if I wanted to get some feedback, I would have volunteered my opinions.
I had a trial with a very contentious prosecutor. We did not get along at all, and we went into the jury room afterwards, and we just were like sitting down at the foot of the head of the table, but like kind of our backs to each other to like interact anyway. It was just very. I don't know if the jury caught on how much we didn't like each other, but it was very stiff, and we asked her questions and we left, and that was that. So, you know, if people get jury duty summons, recommend they take it?
Yeah.
Definitely, especially if they haven't done it before.
Yeah. Do you feel that you were contributing to society and being patriotic?
Yes.
Well, I think that's all the questions I have. Brianna, Dan, thank you guys for taking the time to speak with us. And Evelyn, thank you for staying asleep. Mostly. I guess this is the end. This is Noah Weil with the Better Know a Lawyer podcast. Signing off.